Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be Reese Curtis making his debut. This episode will be looking back at the 1-0 victory for Fulham against Blackburn at Ewood Park. Reese was at this match, so he'll describe what he saw on Saturday. Before we do get going, I have to welcome Reese to the show, making his debut, like I said. Reese, welcome to Cottage Talk.
Hi, Russ, and hello, everybody listening. Thanks for inviting me onto the show. Looking forward to talking about the match, even if it was a bit dull at times, but just talking Fulham, so all good.
Exactly. We're talking Fulham, so it is all good, and I look forward to going through this with you. But before we do that, tell everyone a little bit about yourself.
So I started supporting Fulham in 98-99, so just after Alfie bought the club. My parents met at Fulham, so I'm naturally a Fulham supporter from my parents. I was a season ticket holder for quite a few years. I went to games nearly every single weekend, home and away. All I've really known is the glory years, I suppose, since Alfie had bought a couple of promotions and then into the Premier League. And then I went on the Europa League run. I went all around Europe, spent a lot of money going to see a Juventus game, etc. So a lot of positive Fulham memories. The last couple of years obviously haven't been the best, but hopefully this year things are starting to take a turn and everyone seems a bit more positive on the message boards and Twitter. Hopefully it continues.
Okay, very good, my friend. And you and I talked off air. You are located in the Midlands, which is great because you get to go to many of these away matches now.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, in the Premier League, a lot of the teams are either quite far north or really far south. In the Championship, there's teams within 14 teams, I think it is, within 19 minutes of where I live, or just over 90 minutes. So this year I'm planning about 14, 15 trips that I can easily go to and not including home games. So I should be able to go to a lot of games this year, hopefully.
Well, that's fantastic. That's great, Reese. And hopefully we'll have you back soon to let us know what you saw in some of these matches. And I'm just feel very fortunate that you could join me today. We had a delay of a day. Just want to mention that to everyone that was wanting to know why we did not do the show yesterday. The club didn't release the replay until this morning. I watched the replay. I would rather watch the replay if I can to do the show. So we just waited a day, and now I'm able to do that with you, Reese, because you could not do it yesterday, but you could do it today. So that's kind of why we're doing it today. But there's still plenty to talk about, and it's still fresh in all of our minds. So let's start here. I know the match was Saturday. Just share with us your opening thoughts on what you watched at Ewood Park on Saturday.
I mean, overall, in my opinion, it was a pretty poor match and the poorest Fulham display I've seen this year, partly because of the way Blackburn set up, but there was very few chances for either side in the whole game. Especially in the first half, Blackburn, 10 men behind the ball, there was very little room in between the lines and behind the defence, which led to Fulham just keeping a lot of keep ball passing side to side. It was pretty boring to watch, to be honest. Second half, it was a bit more open. Blackburn had a very good chance, which drew an excellent save from Button. But to be honest, the whole game, that was their only chance that I can remember. A couple of half chances for Fulham. But towards the end, there was only one team who really wanted to win it, to be honest, and that was Fulham. And Fulham were pushing for it. Blackburn were retreating. Looked like they were just playing for the point towards the end. It was way more pedestrian than previous games. Like, I've been to a few games this year and Fulham were playing quite attacking, quick football, but it was very slow and a lot of backwards passing, sideways passing. The fullbacks especially were nowhere near attacking as they have been in previous games that I've seen. It was almost like they were being told not to push forward, or whether it was player choice, I don't know. There was no crossing at all, which was quite baffling considering there's Matt Smith in the box and quite often he was in good positions, but there'd be a crossing position, the fullback would just stop, cut back and just keep the passing going. Don't get me wrong, we all like possession football, but when you've got a guy, a big unit like Matt Smith in the box who's good in the air, you play to his strengths, and we were clearly playing against a different system that did not suit Matt Smith at all. There's just complete lack of movement, to be honest. Compared to previous games, it was quite a poor Fulham display. It came down to Fulham, but also the way Blackburn set up. That would be my overall thoughts on the match.
Okay, very interesting, because like I mentioned, I just watched the replay today. I listened to it at the beach up in Maine, And, you know, there's only so much you can get from listening to it. Again, Gentleman Jim and Jamie Reed did a very good job at describing it. And one word they kept saying often, Reese, and I'm curious your thoughts about this, it's two words. I shouldn't say one word, it's two words. They kept saying this over and over again, and it made sense when I watched the replay. Final ball. The final ball seemed to be lacking on many,
absolutely,
many occasions for Fulham. So talk a little bit about that before we move on, because when I saw the passing, like you were talking about, it would always be that one pass that just would not come off. So talk a little bit about the final ball.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the bulk of the passing, I mean, I tried to look to find the stats, see how many balls went sideways and backwards, but like you say, that final ball was very poor. I mean, I can remember a couple of occasions where Matt Smith could have played a couple of people on from behind, and he scuffed the ball, and it was a very poor pass. Kearney had a couple of occasions where players were running in behind, and it was just, like you say, that final pass where players had made runs, and they didn't pull it off, which was quite surprising. I would say the only one who made some quite good through balls was, a couple of times I can remember, was MacDonald. Parker kept passing it sideways, doing his usual pivot turns, but definitely, without a doubt, the final pass was very, very poor throughout the whole entire game. There was chances to get in behind, very few rare opportunities to get in behind the way Blackburn played so deep and men behind the ball, but when they did come to fruition, it was not good. The quality was very poor from our midfield and attack.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to bring that up right off the bat, because it was glaring when I watched it, you know, and
yeah.
I think part of it has to do, what you said, Reese, had to do with how Blackburn set their team up. Besides Danny Graham, everyone else was back, and they were organized. They played like the away team. It was funny watching Blackburn at home play like the away team. But regardless, there were opportunities to get passes in very good situations, and for whatever reason, the final ball was just not there. Pass was missing. And I want to get your thoughts on this, because now we're going to transition to talk about the starting 11, because I was thinking that maybe a little bit had to do with chemistry not being where it will be later on in the season, because you're dealing with many new players. You have a starting 11, you have a new player being introduced who, based on what I watched and what I listened to, was lively. But getting on the same page with him is going to take a little bit of time, and that's Cabana.
Yeah.
So I want to get
definitely.
Your thoughts on the starting 11. I was surprised, honestly, when I saw the starting 11 that he was starting, because just a few days before, he was playing in a match.
Yeah. I totally agree. I wasn't expecting him to play at all. I wasn't too sure whether he would play LVC or someone else to come in, potentially Woodrow, but I was very surprised to see him start. I would say out of the start 11, he was the only surprise. I thought it was exactly as expected by Cabano. I wasn't sure if he would change the defence due to Sigurdsson coming in, but I think why change a winning team when the defence are doing so well? I think I saw a stat on Twitter yesterday where we've achieved 40% of our clean sheets already this year compared to last year, and we're still in August, so that stat alone tells you why would you mess up the defence. I mean, Malone played very well in midweek, probably his best match for Fulham, so was there an opportunity for him to come back instead of Sessegnon? But Sessegnon seems to be the first choice now, and he played pretty well yesterday defensively, so all in all, it was as expected bar Cabano. But with Aite out now, I suppose it was a perfect opportunity to, I think if Aite was fit to play, I don't think Cabano would have played, but it was a perfect opportunity to just throw him in now and see how he did, especially against Blackburn, who were playing pretty poor this year, so it was probably a good game to get him to start, to be honest.
I tend to agree with that, but I was just surprised by it, just because he had recently played. It makes sense, like you said, with Aite out, then you put in Cabano, so it fits. But it was just a little bit surprising. It was it was a little cavalier, you know, again, a little gung-ho, which I actually like by Savisa.
Yeah.
You know, basically saying, you know what, I signed this guy, he's going to play. And he did, and definitely I want your thoughts on Cabano overall when we rate the players. I want to get your thoughts
definitely.
About him. Based on what I saw, I thought, like I said, I thought he looked lively and definitely had a couple of shots on target. But let's now transition. Let's talk about your first half observations. I just jotted down a couple of things, but I want you to share whatever you want about what you actually saw. So I'll just mention these, and these quickly. In the eighth minute, Blackburn actually had a good chance to score, but Danny Graham Shaw went over the bar. That was a decent chance for Blackburn. But then it became real cagey, like you've already talked about. Really, it was really back and forth. There was really nothing separating the two teams for a good amount of the first half, what I saw. But then Fulham started to come into life somewhere after the 30-minute mark. And then you have in the 34th minute, we're going to talk about Cabano, because Cabano, great opportunity here, shot on target, and the goalkeeper had to make a nice save, or it would have been 1-0 to Fulham. Then shortly after that, he had another opportunity on a header. So again, Fulham started to come to life later on in the first half, but the beginning, I want to say for the first 30 minutes, there really wasn't much in it. That's what I saw watching the replay. Now it's time for your observations actually being there. Reese.
Yeah, I completely agree, Russ. I mean, I've got a couple of notes here, and I put in the first 30 minutes, the game was literally just dull. There was nothing really to report bar the Graham chance where he got in behind. Looking from the replay, I'm not too sure whose fault it was, whether it was Sessegnon was quite high up, but he had been just on an attack and run, and he looked like to get in behind Madal. In my opinion, Graham should have done better. I mean, in my opinion, he could, like I say, could have done a lot better, but other than that chance for the first 30 minutes, the game was very dire and poor. There was a lot of possession from Fulham, but especially in the first 15 minutes, Fulham kept the ball literally in our half, just passing across. Parker was coming very deep in almost a quarterback role, picking up the ball off the defence, spraying it to left and right to Sessegnon and Odoi. And that was pretty much the first 30 minutes. There was not much attacking intent from Fulham, to be honest. We were just almost getting a feel of the game. We were keeping the ball, making Blackburn move. But we wasn't passing quick enough, so I was thinking, well, we're not going to tire Blackburn out playing this way, because it was so pedestrian-like that we were having all this possession, but we were going absolutely nowhere with it. There was no attacking intent or direct intent. And then, like you say, I suppose it was when Cabano had that chance, the Fulham fans got lifted a little bit. He harassed the midfielder, I think it was their holding midfielder. He worked really hard all game, got the ball off and went on a little mazy run, and he had a pretty decent shot. I would expect any keeper at that level to save the shot, but it was a good reward for his effort to win the ball back and went on a good little run. Very direct player and had a decent shot, and like I say, the keeper saved it well. He was quite direct in the first half when he picked the ball. He was looking to run. But I would say out of the whole Fulham team in the first half, he was probably the only one who had showed any real proper attacking intent. And the header, I haven't watched the replay back, but from what I saw in my angle, he should have done quite a bit better. I know he's obviously a small guy and he seemed to get a pretty good leap, but it seemed like, in my opinion, he should have done better, but I haven't seen that back. So overall, the first half was pretty poor, but bar that chance for Graham and the chance for Cabana, that was literally all there was to report on the first half.
Okay, going back to that header, it's very interesting because I've watched it several times and listening to it. Gentleman Jim said that he believed that he was actually, or I'm paraphrasing, it looked like he was trying to pass it instead of going directly on target. I'm still not sure. I've watched it a few times. I you know, because there was an opportunity there, but again, it just went wayward. I don't know if he was trying to pass it with his head or was trying to get it on target and just missed. But that was another opportunity. But the first one, let's go back to the first one, because that was really the first time I think I really got to see the skill of this guy. Maybe a little bit earlier, but to really see what he's all about, how quick he was to take the ball away from the Blackburn defender and then just right on target, go for it. And what's funny about this shot by Cabano, the way the game is played in the championship, so many players take shots from distance. And Fulham, for some reason, don't take enough shots from distance. This, to me, was a positive sign that you have a player that is not afraid to take a shot from distance.
I totally agree, Russ. If you at the game on Saturday, there was a lot of fans around me screaming for our players to shoot. So many times we're getting shooting positions or crossing positions where just put it in, take a punt, take a chance. You know, there might be a deflection. It might drop to someone's feet and get an easy goal. But we just always want to play like a poor Barcelona, to be honest. We want to do that perfect goal. We want to thread it through, like, nice, intricate passing. But when there's so many players behind the ball like there is with Blackburn, that's very hard to do. I know we've done it in previous games where we've done some pretty amazing passing moves and we've been a pleasure to see. But sometimes you just need to take a shot, to take a chance. And exactly like Cabano did there, he was running through. He maybe could have gone on a bit further or etc. But he just took a punt. And it was a very good shot. I mean, don't get me wrong. The keeper should have saved it, and the keeper did save it. But it definitely attacking the 10, and he was willing to take a chance. And compared to the rest of the Fulham team on Saturday, they all just wanted to play the perfect pass and tap-ins. And it was very infuriating at times. There was a lot of fans around me, a lot of swear words saying just shoot. So yeah, definitely, I completely agree with you on that one.
It gets a little frustrating because ever since we went down to the championship, I've noticed how many teams just really have attacked us from distance and actually have won matches because of it. Sheffield Wednesday stands out to me. Players just taking shots from distance. And I'm wondering, why have we not taken that approach? I know we want to play, like you said, that ticky-tack style of football, and it's nice to watch, but at some point, just take a shot, shoot. Kevin McDonald did it in the prior match against Cardiff City. There needs to be more of that. I will say in the second half, because we'll talk about it, Tom Kearney took a shot from distance. There needs to be more of that, Rhys. Honestly, there needs to be more players not afraid to take shots from distance.
But then you've got to come down to, are they being instructed to keep the ball more? I mean, I know there are some coaches out there who think it's a waste of possession. You're keeping the ball and pop shots are pointless. Like, you're wasting possession. Keep the ball. Wait for a better opportunity. I mean, I don't know if Jokanović is saying to them, don't waste the shots. But then, like you said, Kearney in previous matches has taken quite a few shots and he had a few in the second half. So, but I totally agree, whether it's manager instructed or lack of confidence or not wanting to give the ball away, I'm not too sure. But I completely agree on that point.
Okay, excellent, my friend. Very interesting observations. Obviously, like you said, there weren't that many opportunities for either side, and it was dire at times. You know, again, I'm watching the replay, and the first 30 minutes was like, what is going on here? Because it brought it all back to me while I was listening to it at the beach, you know, seeing that final ball just not being good enough. The opportunities there, Rhys, just for whatever reason, the passes were not coming off, and it was frustrating watching the replay. All right,
the other thing you mentioned, I mean, last year if I had saw that display, I wouldn't have been as annoyed because I would as expected. But with the start we've made and the attacking intent we've had this season and how well we've played, it was almost the Fulham of old that, like, who is this Fulham we're seeing at the moment? We don't play like this recently. So I think that's why more people were very frustrated. I personally was going to Blackburn thinking we were going to knock 3 or 4 past them. It was my daughter's first game this weekend, and I thought, oh, what a brilliant first game she's going to have, see us smash Blackburn. But it just didn't play out at all how I thought it would go. I think that's why people are more frustrated, maybe, because it's not what we're expecting now. We've got a lot of high hopes of how we've started, and the expectations are a lot higher.
I totally agree with that. The caveat to all this, the other side to all this, goes to Blackburn. You do have to give them some credit because they did play this style. They did play, besides Danny Graham, everyone else was just behind the ball. There was little room, but there were still opportunities. I hate to say it. There were still opportunities.
Yeah.
The passing just wasn't there, Rhys. That's the frustrating part from
definitely.
I could see from you and the 500-plus Fulham supporters that were there. It was there for them, but they just were not executing for whatever reason. They just weren't executing. All right, before we move to the second half, I forgot to ask you this at the beginning of the match, so at the beginning of the show too. What was the atmosphere like at the beginning of the match and also at halftime? I'm curious what it felt like at Ewood Park.
I mean, at the beginning of the match, I heard a few fans talking. I didn't personally talk to any, but everyone was very positive. Everyone, I think, had similar expectations to myself. Thought we were going to drive them over today and smash them. I think a lot of us were very positive. Everyone was saying we should win quite comfortable here. Everyone was like, a few people talking about Cabana, saying I'd be really excited to see him. Just a really positive vibe. I heard people talking when they're having a couple of drinks, people really positive. But I think very early on, the way we started playing, frustration grew quite quickly. We would everyone was a bit perplexed why we were playing so sluggish and so slow across the back. I mean, of course, the way Blackman set up caused that, but I think we were way too slow still compared to even how Blackburn set up. At half-time, same again, I think fans were just a bit like, oh, just a bit shocked of how we had turned out, really, that it was very a poor performance in the first half. I mean, people did recognise, I mean, I had a couple of people saying, well, when you're playing against teams like Blackburn who aren't playing so well at the moment, they're going to try and frustrate you and make it difficult, and that's exactly what they did, and they did that well. But I think expectations, people thought, well, that's all well and good, Blackburn can play like that, but we should be able to get through that. And like you say, when there's so many opportunities, like Matt Smith was running behind, in behind, I know he's not the most mobile player, but Aluko and Cabano running in behind, and Parker picks the ball up and they're running in behind, and a player with a bit of vision or a bit of attacking intent would play those players through. There was times, but they would just stop, pull it back and go back to the defence. And it was infuriating to watch. There were so many fans getting really angry, going back to Button, going to the fullbacks when there was times to play it forward. Yes, their possession is a great time, but there was times to split the Blackburn defence and it was just never, ever taken. And it was quite, the first half, the atmosphere grew quite, I think it was tired of the way we were playing that exactly.
Listen, I can certainly understand that. And I'm glad that you described it to feel like it has in the past, the form of old, you know, the sideways passing, the hesitancy instead of really just going for it. And that's, you know, it's funny now that you said it, it did feel a little bit like that, but I felt that we had more pace. So I figured eventually we would break them down. I didn't think it would take as long as it did.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, obviously at the very end of the match, like I said, you have to give a little credit or maybe more than a little credit to how Blackburn set up. But again, the opportunities were still there. That's the execution,
I mean,
just wasn't there.
Yeah, I mean, bar the Graham chance, which he should have done better, and it was very early on, maybe that unsettled us a little bit, that it was only in the first few minutes of the game where he got in behind, so maybe it unsettled the defenders in the midfield a little bit. But there was no, the fullbacks especially, in the previous games, they have been overlapping and getting crosses in. In this game, Sessegnon would hit a certain point and he just seemed to stop. He was never ever going up. He was going out on the outside. He just literally was almost, he hit a point and he put the brakes on. And he hasn't played like in the previous games. Adoy went on a couple of runs, but it was more the second half. Once again in the first half, they would hit a certain point and they would stop. It was almost like they were scared to commit. But the only person in our half ever was Danny Graham. They were always playing on the counter-attack. So yes, you've got to be wary of the counter-attack. But we're playing the team bottom of the league. They shipped 3 goals to Crewe in midweek. We should be more than confident in our defence that we can cause those counter-attacks and just put more players forward. It just seemed to be very nervous and on edge, like, don't commit, when in previous weeks we have. So I was really confused by that, to be honest.
And that's actually a wonderful observation, because now that you said it, I'm thinking about Sessegnon and also Adoy on the other side. You know, because there was a pass to him that again, he was either was a wayward pass or he was late to get to. I would have to watch it again, but that's some of what we saw. You know, the passing wasn't what it was, and maybe part of it was a little hesitancy. That's a very good observation from you, Rhys. All right, my friend, let's move to the second half. Obviously, there was more going on in the second half, and what's interesting, we talked about the beginning of the first half, how Blackburn had the opportunity. Well, they had an opportunity early on in the second half, and that, again, by Danny Graham. And thankfully, his shot was tipped away by David Button. This is a nice save by Button. That was an opportunity for Blackburn. Then you had a few opportunities for Fulham. You had the header by Matt Smith. And then with 30 minutes to go, you actually had the shot from distance that I talked about from Tom Kearney. Unfortunately, it went over the net. So then we have to transition all the way to the very end of the match. And again, I just jotted down some key moments, and then you can fill in your thoughts, your observations. But I'm going to go all the way to the shout for a penalty on Colley Woodrow. Now, I've watched this several times.
Rocky tackle.
I have to say I was surprised that this was not called, very surprised, especially when I watched it back. He was tackled to the ground. There's no other way to say it. No penalty no foul was called, and I thought that was going to come back to bite us. Honestly, you know that was an opportunity there that it looked like it should have been a penalty call there, but it was not, and that was in the 90th minute. But then we have to go to the fourth minute of stoppage time, where you have I want to say it started with Kearney. I'm not 100% sure. It went to Sessegnon. And Sessegnon's cross deflected off of a Blackburn player, went right to the feet of Tom Kearney, and this was a beautiful shot that
excellent
went in the
finish.
Back of the net.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful shot. And obviously I saw the reaction, and Fulham get the victory with, like I said, 4 minutes in the stoppage time. They added on a few more minutes because of, obviously, the goal. But that's basically how the match ended. I shouldn't say that because Blackburn had a little pressure near the end, but we held them off. But the real moment was the goal for me by Tom Kearney, basically, taking down his old team. And that was nice to see him get that goal, and it was a great shot. And the minute I saw that on the replay, and I've also seen the highlights, it's like, oh, the minute it gets to his foot, you could just tell it's going in the back.
Yeah, it was nice to see the way he celebrated as well. I mean, obviously, it's his old club, so sometimes you get these players where they show a lot of respect, and I can understand that as well, but it was nice to see a 94th-minute winner. The Fulham fans are going absolutely crazy, and then he responded in the exact same thing. He was very happy and went off in his celebration. You can see the team cohesion there. Everyone's really, really happy. I mean, naturally, everyone's going to be happy for the 94th-minute winner, but you can see as a unit, everyone was over the moon and all running in down there and responding in a similar vein to the fans. So it was really nice to see the way he celebrated, and it was a boring Monday celebration out of respect for Blackburn. So it was quite nice to see how he ran off, etc.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right, now I'm going to go to you. And obviously, I described the key moments, but I want to see it through your eyes. So talk about the second half.
Yeah, so it was, to be honest, the first half, the second half was quite similar to the entire first half. Blackburn were playing very deep. It was very pedestrian-like again. They had that excellent chance in behind. And I personally thought Graham put it wide. I mean, from my angle, it looked like Graham had put it wide. But I have seen the replays of the save, and it was actually a fantastic save. That is going in the goal if he doesn't get a touch shot. So well done to Button on that. We would be 1-0 down. So, but once again, bar that chance, that was it. Blackburn offered absolutely nothing else pretty much for the entire game. It was literally all Fulham from there on in the second half. Blackburn did seem to tire. There was way more space in midfield. MacDonald in particular was picking up the ball and going on quite barnstorming runs and running through. And there was just a lot more attacking intent. There was a lot more forward passing. It still wasn't great, to be honest, compared to the previous games I've watched. It was still nowhere near on the level, but it was far better than the first half. I mean, I know you just said that you thought a goal was coming, but I honestly thought it was going to be one of those games where it was just going to be 0-0 and nothing was going to happen. Even though we were more attacking intent, there was still a lack of quality in the final ball and the end product. We didn't really have many chances. Matt Smith had his half chance, like you said, where he headed it straight at the keeper. It was still quite poor in my opinion. But especially, and then to the penalty appeal, it was 100% a penalty. I've never seen more of a dead-on penalty than that was. But it's becoming quite a theme at Fulham this year, especially in the Blackburn as well. Matt Smith, I've never seen a player manhandled as much as Matt Smith and get absolutely nothing for it. I know he's a massive unit, but it's still a foul. He gets grabbed. He's almost getting bear hugs every single game, and we get nothing for it. It happened so many times in the Leeds game. In the Preston game, he should have had two penalties, in my opinion. Definitely one. And then Saturday, he was manhandled, constantly being grabbed, pulled to the side, and we get nothing for it. And then the Woodrow penalty was just enough, really. It was just like, seriously, what more do you have to do to get a free kick or a foul for being pulled as a Fulham player at the moment? The refereeing is shocking in the league, in my opinion, but it was 100% a penalty. It was a rugby tackle on Woodrow. It was ridiculous how you do not get a penalty for that. And then the goal, I mean, like I said earlier, we got into crossing positions and we never ever put the ball in, we cut it back or we don't take pot shots. But when you do, you can get that lucky break. Sessegnon put in a poor cross, but hits the player or he kicks it out full straight to Kearney, and it is a fantastic finish. But that would never happen if Sessegnon didn't put the ball in the box. And that's what was lacking in the first half. He got into those possessions, he would stop and pull it back to Parker or McDonald, and we would start again. You take opportunities, whether it was a poor cross or not. You get lucky breaks sometimes, and it fell straight to Kearney's foot, and bang, and bonk. It was a fantastic finish. I mean, when it came to him, I thought he's going to score, but it was a hard angle. It was on his left foot, obviously a stronger foot, but from the angle where you are, naturally you want to kick it with your right, but straight across the keeper and into the side netting. It was a fantastic finish, and it couldn't have come at a better time, really. I mean, I felt sorry. I was thinking, I've only had to travel 70, 80 minutes to this. I mean, there's fans coming up from London and had to sit through all this. I was like, poor them, but it was a perfect finish. I'm sure no one was moaning come the end.
Okay, very good, my friend. Before we move on, I want to mention or ask you this. You said this is your daughter's first match. How did she react when she saw the Kearney goal?
Yeah, I mean, I posted a video on my Facebook last night. I mean, she was a bit hit and miss throughout the game. The first 30 minutes, she was really enthusiastic and clapping, asking a lot of silly questions like, or in the pre-match, she was going, why are the players dancing when they were doing on their fitness run? She thought they were dancing. But about the second 30 minutes, she was bored. I stuck her on the iPad and put her some headphones on because she didn't like all the loud singing and stuff. But the last 30 minutes, she watched quite attentively, and she was clapping and high-fiving me and gave me a cuddle and that. So she reacted quite positively to it. So it was brilliant.
That's great, my friend. That's great. That's a wonderful moment for you and your daughter, and I'm glad that you were able to share that. Before we go to stats, there's one thing that you and I talked off air, and I think right now is a good time to talk about it because I think it involves what happened in the second half, and those were the substitutions. So let's go through them right here. We'll talk about them later when we talk about rating Slavica, but I want to talk about them right now because these three substitutions, I think, play a part in this victory here. In the 70th minute, you have Colley coming on for Matt Smith. In the 78th minute, I think this is the one that really stands out to me, you have Yothabed coming on for Scott Parker. And then the 90th minute, you have LVC coming on for Niskins Cabano. And first of all, I just have to say, I can't believe Cabano was able to play 90 minutes after playing midweek.
Yeah.
So seriously, good for him. But let's talk about the substitutions. But I really want your thoughts about Yothabed coming on for Scott Parker, because you and I talked off air, and I think this is a significant move, because in years past, I would see a like-for-like substitution. But for me, this showed me that Slavica was going for the victory because he brought on an attacker instead of someone like Tunnicliffe.
Yeah, I mean, when Yozabed came on, he didn't really make a massive difference, but in terms of what you're saying to Jokanović and maybe the what it was sending to the people on the pitch, look, we're going for the win here. We're not settling for a point. We want to get promoted this year. This is the kind of game we need to be winning. So bringing on Yozabed is telling the players on the pitch, we are going for the win here. And definitely in previous, definitely under Simons, Tunnicliffe would have came on in that game. I mean, don't get me wrong, I rate Tunnicliffe. I think he brings a lot of the team, especially energy, and the game did need some energy. But Yozabed, from what I hear, I mean, I only saw the highlights in midweek, but the kind of player is that kind of player who's going to unlock doors and thread passes through. And that's what we were missing the entire game, that bit of vision and that bit of quality in the end. So for him to bring him on and not settle for the point and say, we are going to win this game, is a very positive sign and a good positive intent for Fulham that, like you say, we have definitely not had in the last couple of seasons. In previous seasons, we would have drew that game. And I think it's another reason why to be so optimistic this year is that, like I say, in previous years, we definitely would have drew that game, and we've gone and won in the 94th minute and not conceded in the 94th minute or lost in the 94th minute. It's quite a positive change.
Absolutely. It's funny because when that happened, I went back to the match I went to back in 2012. It was at the Majeski. It was a crazy 3-3 draw, Reese.
Okay, yeah.
Fulham went ahead 3-2, and I'm thinking, okay, here we go. We're going to get the victory. But that team under Yo would give up late goals often, and I mean often. And then it ended up in a 3-3 draw. So I'm thinking about that compared to where we are now, to a team that, like I said, Jokanović, I think, sent a message to his team, whether it worked or not, bringing on Yosebed, we're going for it. And
yeah,
the next thing you know, a draw becomes a victory. Those 2 points can become vital later on in the season. And seriously, you can build on that. When you're in another situation just like that, you're thinking, we're not going to settle for the point. I know we're on the road. We're going for the victory. And that's something that you can build on. That's why what was so encouraging about that was the approach, was the intent. Because I've seen too often Fulham managers have a negative intent. Go for the draw. Stay with the draw. Let's take the point. The point's vital, right? Well, Jokanović doesn't have that type of attitude. Like you said, it's the attitude that we want to get promoted, so we need all 3 points. That's what I took out of it.
Previous games as well. I mean, Leeds game, we should have won the game. Reading, we still, once again, we should have won the game. We've dropped 4 points in Leeds and Reading games that we really should have won. So to then go and drop another 2 points to Blackburn would be quite negative, really. If we are seriously on about getting promotion this year or getting top six at least, these are the games we have to be winning. So we've already dropped 4 points against teams in my opinion in games we should have won. So, like, even though Yosebed didn't make a massive difference, that definitely positive intent did pass on to the team on the pitch, because in the last few minutes, Sessegnon and was overlapping. Odoi was overlapping. Players were running from midfield. So we were clearly going for the win. Only one team was going to win it. I thought it was going to end 0-0, but if one team was going to score, it was never going to be Blackburn. They didn't even have a player in our half. So it definitely, Yosebed might have not made a difference, but what the message it sent to the players on the pitch absolutely did. We were going to go for the win for this game. 1 point is not good enough. So totally agree on that point.
Okay, very good, my friend. I know I keep saying before we go to the stats, but I have one other thing that I want to go back to, because you brought up a very interesting point when you're talking about the ref and the situation with Colly Woodrow, but more importantly, the situation with Matt Smith. Matt Smith gets fouled a great deal, and I think part of the problem here for Fulham is going to be that teams are going to continue to do this, Reese, until someone calls it. They're going to continue to bully him because of how big he is. The refs aren't going to call it. It's going to take that first call to change how teams defend Matt Smith. They're going to keep on trying to beat him up until a call happens. That's why at some point someone needs to make a call on Matt Smith, because they're just going to keep on doing this to him.
There was one moment in the game. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Cabano, actually. And he shoulder barged one of Blackburn's defenders. And he is twice the size of Cabano. And Cabano hardly touches him. The defender went flying. And we got a free kick against us. And I was thinking, why Matt Smith is a massive guy. And he's been grappled and stuff. And we don't get it. And then Cabano, I think it was, just touched this player and he went over, drew a foul, like the players do these days. I mean, it was good play by the Blackburn player. You feel the touch, you go down, you get a free kick. But it's just no different to what happens week in, week out on Matt Smith, yet we get absolutely nothing for it. And I think sometimes Matt Smith is too honest. I can't remember. I think it was in the first half. There was a player all over Matt Smith. And I mean, I know this might split difference of opinion, but in this day and age, I would go down, you would draw a free kick, but he's too honest sometimes. Where he stays, because he's such a big lad, it's to take him to the ground, you've got to have some sheer power behind you. And I think sometimes, because he's so strong, he can withhold it. And you see so often in the Premier League now, unless you go down, you don't get anything for it. So sometimes I think he's a bit too honest for his own good also.
No, that's a good point. That's actually an excellent point. All right, my friend, let's now talk about the stats, as I've been talking about it so much. Here are the overall stats for the match. Possession. Fulham had 63% to 37% for Blackburn. Total shots in favor of Fulham, 10-8. On target in favor of Fulham, 4-3. Corners were in favor of Blackburn, 4-3. Crosses in favor of Fulham, 21-17. Tackles in favor of Fulham, 15-14. Attempted passes, 604 to 352 in favor of Fulham. Attacking passes, this is not a surprise, 294 to 123 in favor of Fulham. Passing accuracy, this is a number that I like to look at. You want it to be over 80%. Fulham were at 84%. Blackburn were at 73%. Accurate passes, 511 to 258 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels, Blackburn won this 19-16, and Falls 13-9 in favor of Blackburn. All right, Reese, what do you make of the full-time stats?
I think the three stats that completely represent the game there is passes made way more than Blackburn, the pass success, but also the attacking passes. It clearly just shows you how the game played. Fulham had a hell of a lot of possession, way more ball, way more passes than Blackburn were ever going to play, but it was in the wrong areas. It was the wrong type of passes. It was always going back to Button. It was always going to Parker in splitting up the centre-backs, almost like Barcelona kind of play. The centre-backs were a bit wider. Parker would come in, pick up the ball, pass it to one of the full-backs. That was literally the first half. That's all Fulham did, pretty much. And then the stat there, I can't remember what number you said, but the attacking passes, they were just... It was just, there was no attacking intent half the time. It was way below them. I mean, I'd love to see where, how many passes were for, actually proper forward passes and not sideways and backwards. But I guess the number would be very low considering to what all of them. I'm quite surprised at the crossing number. I mean, maybe I was watching a different game, but from what I can remember, there was not that many crosses in the game, and definitely not when Matt Smith was playing. There was a few more towards the end, but from what I can remember, Matt Smith, there was hardly any crosses going into the ball to Matt Smith. It was always being cut back, especially Tom Kearney. I mean, I'm a big fan of Tom Kearney, of course we all are, but he would pick the ball up in a good attacking position. He would cut back, obviously, onto his favourite left foot, and he would pass to Parker or McDonald every single time. And just on the edge of the D, Parker would pick out McDonald, and then it would go to the other side. And it was just constantly getting into good crossing positions and just cutting back and keeping the ball across the front of Blackburn's box. So I'm quite surprised at how many crosses we attempted, but it definitely didn't appear to be that many. So that would be the other stat I'd comment on. And aerial duels, Matt Smith, bar defensively, which he was amazing on corners, he didn't win many headers, actually, attacking-wise. He lost a lot of headers, which is quite surprising for Matt Smith. He normally wins everything. Sometimes it's down to Button's poor distribution. He's not the best kicker off the ball, but I can't even blame Button today. A lot of times, Matt Smith didn't win the headers in this game. So aerial draws, I'm not surprised by that stat either.
Okay, very good. Going back to crosses, I think this goes back to what you were talking about in the first half, Reese, when you're talking about the hesitancy of the fullbacks. Maybe
yeah.
That's why the cross numbers weren't higher.
Okay. I mean, I'm just trying to think, compared to previous matches, I mean, I can't remember stats or crosses, but that number actually still seems a lot higher than what I saw in the game. So, yeah, but definitely the hesitancy from the overlapping fullbacks, they did not overlap in the first half. Probably for the first 60 minutes of the game, they were not attacking and not crossing the ball whatsoever. So it was always down to the wingers, Kearney, Luca, etc., to cross the ball in. So, but yeah, there was hardly any crossing throughout the entire game from what I can remember, especially when Matt Smith was on the ball field rather.
Okay, very good. And honestly, I can't remember my name half the time, so I'm not sure about the crossing numbers normally, honestly.
Yeah.
But I just remember you really going into the fact of the fullbacks being hesitant, and I noticed that as well, especially in the first half.
Yeah.
But to your credit, you mentioned it in the second half that it changed in the second half, where they actually were not being as hesitant and crossing the ball a little bit more. You mentioned Sessegnon and Odoi as well. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting why that they were so hesitant against Blackburn.
It was weird because it was almost like they had been instructed to do it. There was honestly a point I was watching Sessegnon quite a lot. I mean, it was really a 16-year-old kid all really enthusiastic about him doing well. So I watched him quite a lot, and I play left back myself. So it was quite. It was almost like he would hit a certain point and he would just stop. Literally, he would hit a point and just stop. It was almost like he had been instructed to do so. He wouldn't carry on or whatever. So. But
yeah, if I can remember correctly, especially with Sessegnon, he would get to a certain point, stop, and then pass it sideways.
Yeah, every single time. I mean, in previous games, especially Odoi as well, we've seen a lot more of him this year.
Same thing, right.
Odoi would get his head down and he would just go. There was a couple of occasions in the second half where Odoi did that, but in the first half, once again, it was like we're just going to keep the ball here. We're not going to try and actually get in some crosses, etc. It was just very pedestrian and no attacking attempt. And it was almost like it was instructed to keep the ball and stop at a certain point. Maybe, like I said, the two early chaff, each half there was both early chances for Blackburn getting in behind. Whether that was playing on players' minds, I don't know. But it was definitely, it was almost like it was instructed, in my opinion.
Okay, very interesting there. All right. Let's now go into rating the players. Let's do this in phases. Let's start with David Button and then go to the defense, the two fullbacks, and then, of course, the center back. So let's do five. These five, we'll do it in three pieces, basically. So let's start with David Button and the overall defense.
Okay, so Button had very to do all match. When he was called upon, he did very well and made that one excellent save. And I've given him a 7. There was a couple of shots where he parried, very easy shots to save, and he parried them, but he recovered well. And another thing I noticed about Button, he's very hesitant on his line. There's a few times where I think balls are coming and he could come and claim them. He did it on a couple of occasions, but once again, he was very hesitant. And I think we've had that problem at Fulham for quite a while now, where the goalkeeper seemed quite hesitant of coming off the line and claiming the ball. But overall, I gave him a 7. I mean, that save was fantastic, and it stopped us from going 1-0 down. But he had very little to do, to be honest. So 7 for that save. A couple of the parried shots were pretty poor, but he recovered well and hesitant on the line. So I think 7 would be a pretty decent reflection of his performance. Adore and Sessegnon gave them 7s as well. I mean, we got a clean sheet, so I would say 6 is the base mark. Everyone starts on a 6. Give them both an extra +1 for the keeping the clean sheet. But they were literally both performances. They were very good defensively. I think Sessegnon could have possibly been at fault for Graham's first half chance, where he was a bit further forward, but he's just gone on an attack and run. So you have to take that into account. Possibly Madal's fault. But they were both solid defensively, but adventure going real attack intent, both of them didn't show any at all. So I think 7 would be a fair rating for them. Callas played well. Can't really remember much from his performance, to be honest. A couple of good headed clearances and interceptions, just an overall very solid performance. He reads play really well. I know Madal gets a lot of praise for reading the play, and Madal's an excellent centre-back, but I think Callas is very, very good as well. I've heard a lot of people say they think with Madal and Callas we would struggle against more physical teams putting balls in, but against Preston in particular, which game I was at, Preston crossed the ball a hell of a lot. And then before every game I've been to so far this year, Callas and Madal specifically focus on high balls and getting headers, and Callas's leap is very, very good. He is very good in the air. So I don't really buy into that whole, when we come up against more physical teams across it, we might struggle. I personally think Callas is excellent in the air, and so is Madal. They both have very good leaps. Before the games, they both practice it constantly, every single time. So I gave him a 7 as well. Madal, I gave a 6. In my opinion, he was at fault for both of Blackburn's chances. That could have resulted in goals. Graham's in the first half and the second half. Got caught to Graham in behind him on both times. Other than that, he played well and some good interceptions and clearances, so just a flat 6. I don't think he was amazing, but he wasn't seriously poor. Moving on to the midfield now. So
no, that's okay. That's okay. Let's go back a little bit before we go to Kevin McDonald and Scott Parker. The way that you were describing the fullbacks, especially Sessegnon, with the first chance of that opportunity for Danny Graham, maybe he was going forward too much. Again, this goes back to what you were saying, Reese. Maybe that was the cause for the hesitancy later on in the match.
Yeah, I maybe that was playing on his mind. In my opinion, it was his fault, but this era, fullbacks are attacking players, so when they're forward, you need to change your position. Midfield needs to cover, so he's just gone on the attack and run whilst it's hit in his fullback area where Graham has gotten in behind, while someone else should be covering that, and Madal should be taking that more into consideration. And Madal did get caught. He'd got in behind Madal, so in my opinion, it was more Madal's fault than Sessegnon, even though it was in his position. He's been up the pitch, so
sure,
that's part of it. But I definitely agree that he's 16 years old. I mean, we've got to not forget that. He's 16. I mean, pretty impressive for playing championship level football at the age of 16. So he's maybe mentally not as developed as some other players, and it might have been playing on his mind, oh, if he had scored there, it would have been my fault, I was out of position. So maybe that did cause a lot of his hesitancy from going forward in the rest of the game.
Yeah, listen, you know, being fair here, Ryan Sessegnon is going to be a hell of a player, and this is a learning experience for him. We're just, you know, again, you're just describing what you saw, and that's being fair, but we both know that Ryan Sessegnon is going to learn from this, and hopefully, you know, again, in future matches, we'll see things differently, because that's the mark of a good player is to learn from situations and then correct them moving forward. And I think, you know, again, only good things to come from Ryan Sessegnon, but we have to, you have to report, and I have to also ask you about it, what you see, and this is what you saw. So you're still being fair, my friend.
I mean, other than that, he played very well defensively. I mean,
right.
He's very good at tackling. I mean, he works really hard. I mean, he's quite a small boy, but he still gets himself about. I mean, other than that, I couldn't fault him. He was very, very good all game. He put in quite a good couple of good tackles. He reads play quite well. So other than that chance, but of course it should, in my opinion, Graham should have put that away. I would expect if a Fulham was in that position, I would have at least hit the target. So if that had gone in, he would have been culpable, one of the players culpable. So you've got to say it. But other than that, he played really well all game.
Okay, very good. Very good, my friend. All right, let's move on. Let's now talk about Kevin McDonald and Scott Parker.
So they both had very similar performance, really, bar the way they attacked. I mean, Parker, I've given an 8. I'll explain why. So he played a very good performance. I can remember one tackle in the second half, which drew a lot of cheer from the Fulham crowd. There was a player through on goal. Parker came flying in from behind with a perfectly timed tackle. I mean, if it was not perfect, it would have been a penalty. And he caught up with him. I mean, Parker's not the most mobile now, but it was such an amazing tackle. He came flying in and got the ball. And that's what you expect from Parker. He was all over the pitch. He made some very good interceptions. He made some good tackles. He was breaking up play really well. And he was playing the quarterback role. He was picking the ball up and spreading the ball. But as we all know as Fulham fans, he is infuriating when it comes to attacking play. He kills attack after attack. But the way I deal with it now, I mean, I normally bash my head against the wall when he does it with his pivot turns and everyone sees it. Everyone can see it. But as far as I'm concerned now, you put Parker in the team, you know what you are going to get. There's no point in getting annoyed at anymore because he's too old now. He's never going to change. But what he does offer you in the other side of the pitch is immense. I mean, the tackles he puts in, the work he puts in. He is a natural leader. He's constantly talking to people. But other than the pivot turns and passing sideways and backwards, he was very, very good all game. I've given him an 8, maybe because of that tackle was right in front of me and it played on my mind. But he generally broke up play really well. Etc. But yeah, the pivot turns are incredibly annoying, but you just got to deal with that now.
Okay, my friend. All right, let's move on. What's now?
Oh,
do...
McDonald.
McDonald from you. I apologize.
Yeah, so McDonald, I've given an 8 as well. He played really well defensively. He controls the midfield. I think he's been an excellent sign, and he made some countless interceptions and some really good tackles. And he goes on barnstorming runs. It's almost similar to like Yaya Toure-esque. I mean, obviously not of the same quality, but Yaya Toure is a big unit. And when he picks the ball up and he runs, not many people are going to stop him. And McDonald is quite of a similar bulk and stature where he just literally starts running and you know he's not going to get stopped. And he goes on barnstorming runs and it's really impressive to see. I think he's a bit more of an unsung hero for Fulham personally. I mean, I know a lot of people rate him, but I think he's going to make a massive difference to our team this year. And he's a lot more direct than Parker. So I think inevitably Josebed's going to come into the team and we're going to be a bit more of an attacking midfield. I think it'll be Parker that makes the way and not McDonald. I mean, obviously Parker gets a bit more leggy towards the end and we're going to have to pick his games well. But I think McDonald's going to be a huge player for us this season.
Honestly, he's my favorite signing. And whenever I say that to anyone, they're like, really? And I said, yes, Kevin McDonald, because
I really
wanted a player like him for the longest time. And
yeah.
I think you need someone that can do what he does. I think we've been missing it for a long time, Reece. So I want to get your thoughts on that. And And I don't mean to overstate his value, but I just see what he does and what he offers for him.
He's my favorite signing. Also, I completely agree. He makes a massive difference to our team this year. I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of people have been more excited about the attacking players, and Cabano looks like a brilliant player, and Aluko started off really well, and Ite looked good. But I think a lot of our positive play this year and a lot of our solidity in defence is completely down to a way of how McDonald plays. He completely, similar to Murphy, I don't think he's as good as Murphy as controlling the game, but he's better in Murphy defensively by far. But he just, calmness, he picks the ball up. When he picks the ball up, I have no issues. I don't think he's going to lose it. I don't think he's going to get tackled. I just think he's got the ball now. He's going to be fine. He will do something with the ball. Not always amazing, but he'll keep the ball moving. He breaks up play really well. And if he's got the ball at his feet, no one is going to get it off him. He got tackled a couple of times, but overall, when he starts running, he will always do something positive. And I think he's going to be, obviously, the players who get all the goals this year are going to get all the credit, and rightfully so. But I think if we do get top six and go on for a promotion run, a lot of it is going to be down to McDonald.
And I totally agree with that. And listen, he's not the exact player of Danny Murphy, and you just mentioned that. But we've been missing that type of player. I would say, you know, if we were talking about American football, he's your quarterback. And that's what Kevin McDonald is, the player that you need, that we've been missing for the longest time. And I'm just glad that we have finally solidified that need. That has been a need for such a long period of time. And I think it's so key because everything else feeds off that, Reese. That's why I think this signing is so key. All right,
I think a lot of people remember Dixon Atuhu. I mean, he kind of split opinion of a lot of the people, but when he was alongside Murphy, you could really see what a good job he did. And he's a lot better than Dixon Atuhu, but kind of that player. He was big, strong, broke up play well, but he's much better offensively than Atuhu. Also, I would say he's just a much better version than Atuhu. And I mean, personally, I think Atuhu got a bit more stick than he should have, and Murphy would never have been as effective as he would without Atuhu beside him, especially in the European campaign.
I totally agree with that, my friend. All right, we've got to speed things up a little bit, so I'm going to give you Niskins, Cabano, Sone Aluko, Tom Kearney, and Matt Smith. So just give a couple sentences on each one and a rating.
So Kearney, I've given 7. In my opinion, I saw he got man of the match that Michael ran. In my opinion, it was his poorest game this year. A lot of times he went on dribbles and he lost the ball. He took a couple of pot shots, which we were saying players should do, but when he did, I can remember 2 from outside the box. They were very poor shots. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him, but in my opinion, he's our best player and I expect big things from him. Obviously, he scored the goal, hence why I've given him the 7, which was an excellent finish. Aluko, an ominous performance. I can't actually remember much to comment on, to be honest. It was very quiet. Not really sure what else to say. It was just a very quiet performance from what we're expecting him, so I've given him a 6. Smith, I've given him a 7. Offensively, he was anonymous, but we wasn't playing to his strengths. There was no crossing, so goal kicks, etc. He didn't really win as many balls. But the reason I've given him a 7 because defensively, Matt Smith is a massive asset to Fulham in Fulham games. Yesterday, Blackburn had 4 corners that I can remember, and he headed every single one away. They had an attacking free kick. Matt Smith headed it away. He just wins absolutely everything defensively. So for his defensive work, I've given him that extra point. Cabano, I've given an 8. He played really well, and it was a good thing of glimpses of things to come. He was very direct and skillful, and he was always wanting to go forward. He made some really good runs behind, but he was never found. So that I put that down to lack of vision, especially from Scott Parker. And then, as we commented on in the first half, he had that good running shot and drew a good save. And another thing to comment on, which might not be seen, he worked really, really hard off the ball, which every single player did, to be honest. But I liked the look of him, and it was early days, so I've given him an 8.
Okay, very good, my friend. All right. Real quick, man of the match?
Man of the match, I'll give to McDonald. I think he's a bit of an unsung hero, like I said. I think he played really, really well. I would say Parker, but the frustrations from his attacking play is obviously going to draw natural criticism, and I can't give it him when he drives me nuts every single game.
Okay, very good. And you can be on anytime because we can just talk about Kevin McDonald, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Because you and I are definitely on the same page when it comes to Kevin McDonald. All right, we're going to end by rating Slavisa. So give Slavisa a rating from 1 to 10.
So I've given him an 8. The lineup was expected, bar Cabano, which shown attacking a 10, but it's a winning team, so you're not going to change it. He made some really positive substitutions, as we've spoken about. They were all looking for the win, like we said in previous games, or seasons rather, that wouldn't have happened. I would like to know if the lack of attacking intent from the fullbacks and lack of crossing was instructed, but we'll never know that because I couldn't quite understand it. But all in all, you can't really do no wrong at the moment. We're 7 games unbeaten, so who would I be to criticise him? So yeah, overall, I've given him an 8. I think we're playing Blackburn and we should be winning these games, but I can't fault him. The team was attacking. He attacked in substitution, so we did everything possible. I would just like to know how the fullbacks played and the conservative pass and whether that was instructed or whether it just happened on the pitch through
right.
the player's choice.
I would actually like to know that as well, my friend.
Yeah.
Okay, very good, my friend. Great show. Great debut. You were fantastic, my friend. Before we go, any final thoughts?
No, not that I can think off the top of my head. I just really appreciate, obviously, I was hoping to do it after the Leeds game, but didn't happen. I'm just glad I had the chance to come back on, and hopefully I can do a couple more shows. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. Like I said, Reese, you were excellent tonight, so thank you, and I look forward to doing more shows with you, my friend.
Yeah,
but
brilliant.
It is time.
Thank you, Ross.
Not a problem, my friend. Again, seriously, thank you. But it is time to wrap up. Before we go, I want to mention that we are going to be doing our end of the transfer window special. That my final thoughts are going to be about that. We're going to be doing that Wednesday night from 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m. in the UK. That's the time of the show. So we'll be covering the last hour of the transfer window and then a little bit beyond that. And it's going to be a very interesting show. Co-hosting will be Mike Gregg and David Holly. We're going to go through all of the signings, and we're also going to be talking about the transfer policy of Fulham. We didn't get to that in our preview show. We will get to that during this 90-minute episode. I'm looking forward to it, and I cannot wait to do it. But, again, one last time, thank you very much, Reese, and I hope you can join us soon.
No problem. Thank you, Russ.
Okay. Well, that's going to do it for this show. For Reese Curtis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Reese. Have a great night.
Thanks, Russ. Cheers, guys, for listening. Boys.